God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change,
the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. Newcomers, is there anyone here in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you.
Welcome.
Welcome, Aver.
On Zoom, you can raise your hand and someone will chat with you. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus precisely on how to recover from the illness of alcoholism by taking AA Simple Actions. AA Preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not aligned with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy. Neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing steps 5, 6, and 7, and we have Jake and Steve here. Please welcome them. I will read the first paragraph on page 72, and then the panel will share for a few minutes on the reading. All right. Step 5, 6, and 7. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, we're entirely ready to have God remove these defects of character. 7, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Page 72. Having made our personal inventory, what shall we do with it? We have been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and to discover the obstacles in our past. We have admitted certain defects. We have ascertained in rough way what the trouble is. We have put our finger on the weak items in our personal inventory. Now these are about to be cast out. This requires action on our part, which when completed will mean that we have admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our defects. This brings us to the fifth step in the program of recovery mentioned in the preceding chapter. This is perhaps difficult, especially discussing our defects with another person. We think we have done well enough in admitting these things to ourselves. There is doubt about that. In actual practice, we usually find a solitary self-appraisal insufficient. Many of us thought it necessary to go much further. We will be more reconciled to discussing ourselves with another person when we see good reasons why we should do so. The best reason first, if we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking. Time after time, newcomers have tried to keep to themselves certain facts about their lives. Trying to avoid this humbling experience, they have turned to easier methods. Almost invariably, they got drunk. Having severed with the rest of the program, they wondered why they fell. We think the reason is that they never completed their house cleaning. They took inventory all right, but hung on to some of the worst items in stock. They only thought they had lost their egoism and fear. The only thought they had humbled themselves, but they had not learned enough of humility, fearlessness, and honesty. In the sense, we find it necessary until they told someone else their life story. And I believe, Jake, you're going to lead us off. Sure.
Jake McDonald, alcoholic. I always find it easier to talk about a specific step by referencing the work that I did prior to that. And since we're already going to be talking about step 6 as well, I'll just go to 4. So, in order to get to the point where I'm able to talk this over with my sponsor, I had to have that list that it talked about, So step four was about me, you know, creating the step four list and going through with it, you know, going through the process with my sponsor, somebody who is armed with the facts of who he was because he had done it and knew precisely how to do a thorough four step. By this time, my sponsor, I don't know, has done several four steps by the time he sponsored me and I did my four step. And it took me a little time because I'm kind of lazy. When things started to get, I started to feel the pressure, you know, kind of like an unpaid bill, you know, like, you know, that bill's there, you know, you got to pay it. I know I got to pay it. And, you know, back in the day, I wouldn't pay it. And I would just kind of like, you know, it would fester for a while. So that's kind of how my step work has been, you know, especially on the ones that where it was, because I'm just lazy. I would do enough just to get me by until it would fester more, right? And so I finally got the four step done, and I did it thorough for that time period of my life, and then came the fifth step, and I was eager to see what the fifth step was gonna, you know, what it was going to show me. You know, I kind of had a good idea of, you know, of the things, you know, that I, the part that I had to play in a lot of those resentments that I had. But it says here, solitary self-appraisal is insufficient. I needed somebody to tell me if I did it right, you know, line by line, go through each one of those and see if there's things that I miss, if there's a different way of looking at what my part was. And you know, in order to get to that point, I also had to trust the guy that I was going to do this with. By this time, I'd already been meeting with my sponsor, you know, several times. You know, we'd been, you know, meeting once a week. He was reading the big book to me, you know, and I was learning from him. And he's already kind of told me some of his story, some of the things in his past, you know. So it really opened me up to the idea of telling my sponsor, you know, everything on that fourth step. And so the time came, you know, we scheduled some time and we did it in the car. I remember it was raining that night and, you know, it took several hours. And I remember at one point his daughter had called him because she was looking for him to drop something off. And she drove up really fast and handed it off. And I was like, hey, you know, like, it felt strange to have somebody see me on the passenger side of this sedan, of this SUV at night in the rain, you know, like, what did that look like, you know? But I knew that, you know, she had probably, you know, she's known her dad for a long time and kind of understood what was going on. The big book describes pretty accurately what it feels like to have to do a fifth step. And my sponsor accurately described it with one word. I was getting relief, right? Because I was finally able to tell my sponsor some of these things. Actually all these things that I had written down. And you know, it says here that we had but they had not learned enough humility, fearlessness, and honesty in the sense that we find it necessary until they told someone else all their life story. That's what I was getting. I was getting that relief from those things, from my fears. And it says that, you know, we have to do it with someone and God. The process of me telling my sponsor was the process of bringing God into it, because if I just do it by myself, you know, I can kind of speak for God on my behalf pretty easily, you know, very easily. I can rationalize my behavior, and I can do it really fast and say, okay, I got it done, you know. But when I do it with somebody that I trust, somebody is not my best friend, somebody that I know is already going to be able to tell me the truth. I don't need a friend to tell me what to do on this. I need somebody whose only skin in the game is that they stay sober. My sponsor listened to my fifth step so that he could stay sober and help me to, you know, go along with it, right? And help me through the process. So the fifth step for me was a lot of release, a lot of this inner turmoil that I had, things that were, you know, that I didn't, you know, some things that I knew were bothering me and some things that I didn't know were bothering me that much, you know, until I wrote down that fourth step, I realized, man, I got a lot of anger. I knew I was angry, but I just didn't think it was, I didn't know what it was. And we used the seven deadly sins to discover what my character defects were. So the fifth step, I could do the fifth step because I did a fourth step. And I did the fifth step so I can do a sixth step. And if I keep it compartmentalized and do it the way that other people have outlined it and other people have already done it, then I didn't have to. If you would have told me, hey, you need to do a fifth step without all the other stuff, tell another person my character defects. I don't know what my defects of character are, you know, and I don't know who I would tell. Who would I talk to? So to take it out and just read it as it is and then do it from there, I would have never done a fifth step with anybody because I wouldn't have material and I wouldn't have somebody that I trust to do it.
My name is Steve Rocha and I'm an alcoholic.
His name is AJ.
Thank you for inviting us to be here tonight. We really appreciate it. Grateful to be here. So I think Jake hit all the highlighted points, right? I got to have somebody that I can trust. I got to have somebody that has a working knowledge of how to take the steps, apply the steps in my life, and they can guide me through the process. And so the very first time I did a so-called fourth and fifth step, I only did it because I was getting ready to drink again. I was chasing a skirt in a meeting early on, or very early sobriety, because I didn't want to change that behavior. I was relieved. God relieved me of my two grocery handicaps, my drinking and my drugging on the first day. But the rest of it, the lying, the cheating, the stealing, the running around, that didn't go away right away. It took a lot of work. It took, especially the stealing. I like stealing and lying. It kind of goes hand in hand, right, with infidelity. And so I want to change everything except the rest of that, right? I just want to get off the booze and the drugs and change my life. And so the only reason I did it, I did my first so-called fourth or fifth step, was because I was getting ready to drink again. And somebody said, you better go do your inventory. And so I did. I just went home and I wrote down all the bad things I'd done in my life. And because my sponsor and I, we never read the book together. We never did any steps together. We just sat in this car and I read it to him. And that was my fifth step. And the benefit that I had from that is I really told them all those deep, dark secrets that I swore I was taking to the grave. And I did some rotten stuff. I was not a good guy when I got here. Like most of you are good, decent people. I was not. I did a lot of bad things. I hurt a lot of people on purpose. And so I carried a lot of that stuff, all that guilt, the shame, the remorse, all that stuff that came with it. And I remember the first time we did it, we're sitting in, Jimmy was a painter. He was a union painter in downtown Chicago. So he always had his rusty old station wagon and always smelled the paint and turpentine. And we're sitting in the station wagon about 2 o'clock in the morning. And I'm reading this to him and it's snowing. It's like a Norman Rockwell portrait because there's no cars out on the road. So the snow, and there's a couple inches of snow on the ground. And it's beautiful. And I cried when I read this thing because I never thought these are things I'd tell anybody in my life. But this man had earned enough of my trust that I knew I had to do something if I wanted to stay sober. I think deep down inside, I knew I had to make some changes in my life if this was really going to work. But I fought against it because, that in my case, drinking and infidelity go hand in hand. I really don't do one without the other. And I knew I wasn't going to be able to stay sober if I don't change my ways. And so that's what led me to do this. So fast forward a few years, I finally get to Virginia. And I'm dying from untreated alcoholism, 3.5 years in Alcoholics Anonymous. And because I'm not doing any steps, I'm not active. I've had a handful of sponsors here and there, but you know, none of them said we don't really use the book, we don't work the steps. They sounded good in the meeting, but I was always picking the wrong guy, it seemed. Until I'm dying from untreated alcoholism, and I call this guy, and old Navy guy, and he says, get your book and come on over. And that started the process for me. And he laid out this routine. This is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to do it. It's not up for debate. You either do it or you don't. If you don't, we'll still be friends. I still say hi to you, but step along, right? He pats his big book. And I remember we're sitting at his kitchen table. He said, kid, this is all we got. If this ain't what you're looking for, hit the bricks. And I intuitively knew that that's where God wanted me to be right at that moment. And Bill gave me the keys to the kingdom and taught me how to do this deal. And so when we get to the fourth step, he as I'm reading off, and one of the benefits that I had having him as a sponsor, so he didn't read any of the latest self-help books. He didn't find something new in some new workbook on the internet. He didn't say, Steve, I got this great thing. We're going to try it out on you, see if it works. Because he just showed me what he had done, right? Firsthand, because I'm one of the people, I truly believe everything we do in Alcoholics Anonymous has to be from firsthand experience. I can't teach you what I haven't done. And so he as I'm reading this list off to him, and he says, keep it brief. one or two sentences. You'll tell me the details when we get together. You're not writing a novel. Make it quick because we don't want to slow you down. We don't want you to lose momentum writing your fourth step. So as I'm going through this process of giving them the details and all my resentments and so on and so forth, and the three stages of the inventory. Right? I didn't know there were three parts to an inventory. There's the grudge list, the fears list, and the sexual relations list. I didn't know that. I just did what he told me to do and didn't realize that he had me create three inventories, basically. And so when I'm doing the grudge list, he makes out this little bar graph thing, and we use the seven deadly sins, comes right out to him. And the only two books that we've ever used during inventory, during the step process, is the Big Book and the 12 and 12. I haven't used anything else, hadn't seen a need for it. I know there's a lot of other material out there. I've seen a buddy of mine handed me a pamphlet of 175 questions on how to do a personal inventory. And I read it and I was like, man, I don't get it. I don't get it. But if it works for you, have at it, you know. And all the guys he sponsors, that's how they do it. And so anyways, I'm not going to get into diatribe about it. But I try to make it a point to bring outside literature into AA or outside terminology from other fellowships and stuff. And so he does this bar graph, seven deadly sins, and then he shows it to me. And I get to see him. And it just made so much sense as a bar graph rather than saying you got too much pride or your lust is out of bounds or you're too slothful. Because those are the things, those are the main ones for me. Pride, lust, and sloth, you know, and stealing. What's that fall under? Envy. So there's a lot of that. And so when he showed it to me as a bar, it just made more sense than just him telling me that, right? And so by doing that, when we get to step six, and I'll talk about this when we get to step six, it gives me a blueprint of what I'm asking God to remove. Because until then, I don't know what I'm asking God to remove. Thank you.
Reading two is going to be on page 73. More than most people, the alcoholic leads a double life. He is very much the actor. To the outer world, he represents his stage character. This is the one he likes his fellows to see. He wants to enjoy a certain reputation, but knows in his heart he doesn't. The inconsistency is made worse by things he does on his sprees. Coming to his senses, he is revolted at certain episodes he vaguely remembers. These memories are a nightmare. He trembles to think someone might have observed him. As fast as he can, he pushes these memories far inside himself. He hopes they will never see the light of day. He is under constant fear and tension. That makes for more drinking. Jake.
So when I started the fourth step, I did the names first, right? And these are the people that I hated, right? That I was angry with. And I didn't continue on to the next column until I thought I had all the names down, right? So the discovery of everything was one noted so that it wouldn't, for me, it helped me not to influence what I was going to, the process, right? Just write all the names down, everything I'm angry about. One of the names I wanted to put down was my own name. I asked my sponsor, hey, I got to put my name at the top of the list. I have a lot of resentments toward myself. And he was like, you don't need to do that. Because he knew on the last column, I was going to have a whole column all to myself, right? So now I have plenty to be resentful at myself too, because I have a column of all the things that I did to the people that I was mostly angry with. I didn't know that that was going to be the outcome. That's why it helps to have somebody who knows what they're doing with this. And so, you know, it was revealed to me that I did have a double life just based on that step four, you know, based on the outcome of my step five. When I did my step five, you know, my sponsor put it on a graph, right? We graphed it. I didn't know he was graphing. I was just nervous because I'm reading the stuff off, right? And it, you know, I'd read one line, go through the whole process of how I got to, you know, everything. Is that it on that? Well, let's take a look at what you wrote on your part. Let's make sure that we have that thoroughly done, that part. You know, my fault and all that. And he helped me to maybe change it a little bit, or maybe we didn't have to change it at all. Maybe it was exactly what it was. And then we move on to the next one, right? And what we were doing is we were coming up with a pattern of behavior, right? How did I treat these people? What was my response to what they did? The focus, when I did my fifth step, I was hoping it was going to be more on the first column or the second column, what they did to me. I had my fingers crossed for that, but I knew that probably wasn't gonna be the case because I had already seen I got a whole comp for myself. This is going to be a doozy. This is going to take some time. I'm going to sweat through this. I'm going to find out that I was leading a double life. You know, I had this righteous anger that I lived with that rationalized my behavior, rationalized my drinking, rationalized lashing out at people, living in that anger. I liked anger. It made me feel powerful. It fed the very character defects that I had. Pride was a big one for me. Self-centeredness and pride. So that resentment, that anger fed that, and it made me 10 times worse. Because, you know, I had this persona that I wanted people to think of me, you know, that it wasn't that none of that the way my life turned out wasn't my fault. It was everybody else's fault. When I came in here, I didn't have a car. I didn't have a license. Like, you know, I had to ride my bike to these meetings. And I thought very high of myself, even at that point. I still felt pretty high of myself. But I was still very ashamed. I still had a lot of shame. And then anger and shame and self-loathing, you know. But it was because of the way that I was treating people. It's because of resentments that I had. And so it says here, he is under constant fear and tension. That makes him for more drinking. That's exactly what was happening. And I had no clue. I always thought I was just, you know, I had right. I thought that I could live angry, but I was living in fear. It was brought to my attention that anger is the byproduct of the fear. The two basic human emotions are fear and love, right? When he asked me, what do you think are the basic human emotions? I was like, fear and anger. He was like, no, or anger and love. And he said, no, it's fear. And that's why when I did that fears list, I needed help with that fears list because I got stuck on that because I don't know. I came from the military where you're not supposed to have fear, right? And, you know, I jumped out of planes and I did all this awesome stuff that was proving to me that I wasn't fearful. I jumped out of planes because that was part of the job, but I wanted to jump out of planes to prove that I could do it, right? Prove that I didn't live in fear. But that's not the fear that we're talking about. It was way more debilitating fear, way more control over my life, that fear was. And I didn't even know I had it. I needed help with that fear slip because it was causing a lot of tension in my life. It was causing tension in all my relationships because I was living in anger, but I wasn't addressing why I was angry. I was fearful. I wanted you to see what I wanted you to see. And I couldn't make you see that because I couldn't live up to what that expectation was in the first place because I lived in fear. So I needed help with that fears list. I had to call him up and be like, dude, you know, I'm afraid of snakes. And I'm okay with admitting that, right? So I needed help with that. And you know, help me identify what those fears were. And we did, you know, I was able to expose what that fear was. And he was able to, you know, help me with that. That's all I got. Thanks.
Steve?
One of the things that we kind of touched on in the first reading was we usually find a solitary self-appraisal insufficient. And that still applies today. And I think this is why we see so many guys, especially in gals with long-term sobriety, become sponsorless. So who do I turn to? I'm very active with my sponsor. The guy, because I need somebody to talk to about what's really going on in here, right? So when I'm doing this inventory, and Jake touched on the fears, and my fears, by their very nature, are irrational emotions, but they're very real to me. And that's the thing about fear, is it's irrational to most people, but it's real to me, and just like yours are to you. And so learning to do this inventory helps me to recognize that part of the process and leading the double life. So I was engaged to one gal. I'm living on the south side of Chicago. I'm engaged to one gal. And I'm dating this other gal at work. We're going out for lunch together, and then she ends up pregnant somehow. So I got to leave the other girl, and that's my double life. And neither one of them know I'm running the streets till 6 o'clock in the morning. I knew the I had to be off the streets by 6:30 because that's when the good working folk are going to do their daily business, and I can't be seen in yesterday's clothes on the streets at 6:30 in the morning. So I knew that much. But I lead the double life, and even in sobriety, I still don't know how to discard that. And so one of the things that we started doing, my wife and I, so I ended up marrying the gal that got pregnant. She's still my wife today. God bless. I'm so fortunate. Come September, we celebrate 30 years of mostly wedded bliss, mostly blissful, 30 years. And part of the reason that we've been able to do so well is my wife, not initially, but eventually she embraced this AA thing, because initially I was staying out later. I was spending more time in AA because now I'm going to meet a sponsor. We're going out for coffee. We went out for coffee 3 or 4 nights a week, and I didn't have any money. So somebody was had to buy me a cup of coffee, a hamburger or something, and or eat somebody's leftover French fries, whatever. I didn't care. But I'm spending a lot of time, and she's like, man, you're way now more than you were before. I really wasn't. What most of us, or I certainly didn't realize, is when I'm drinking, it takes a significant amount of time to drink the quantities of alcohol that I like to drink. So now that I'm not drinking, what am I substituting it with? And in my case, I used AA because I was unemployed, unemployable. So I just came to meetings every day, went out as often as I could with the guys and the gals, right? And I'd get the sniff test when I come home. She acted like she's going to give me a kiss on the cheek, but really smell if she could smell the alcohol in me, right? That happened for a while. But eventually, she started seeing some progress. And her baby, I started treating the baby a little bit better because, you know, I'm not father material. I'm not husband material. I was really not the kind of guy you want to introduce to your family. And thanks Alcoholics Anonymous, my life's been transformed, right? And so she at some point starts to embrace what we're doing in AA. And I'm grateful to say that there's been more men get sober at our kitchen table. My wife's fed more new guys at our kitchen table than I can count. And because of that, I think that helps do away with that double life thing, right? The Jekyll and Hyde thing. Because I think, this is just my take, I think it's a big deal to have you guys come to my home to see how I really live. I think it's important that you see how I interact with my wife and my kids. We're empty nesters now, so our kids are gone. They're not gone. They're just not in the house anymore. But I think that's important to me, that I dispel that. So you see, this is how I really live. You know, and I'm not telling you one thing and then going home smacking my old lady when I get back because dinner's not ready. Not that I ever did, but that's not what I do. And so I've always been a big advocate for bringing you guys into my home, because it's important that you see what I'm really doing and how I'm really treating my family, because it's too easy to hide behind, you know, it's the old Wizard of Oz thing, never look behind the curtain. That's how I lived my life when I was drinking. Nobody could look behind the curtain. I couldn't let you see me. So the people that I knew during the day never saw me at night, because there's a different crowd, different. So, and never the two shall meet, right? And that's how I lived my life. Thank you.
Next reading is going to be on page 75. When we decide who is to hear our story, we waste no time. We have a written inventory and we are prepared for a long talk. We explain to our partner what we are about to do and why we have to do it. He should realize that we are engaged upon a life and death errand. Most people approach in this way will be glad to help. They will be honored by our confidence. We pocket our pride and go to it, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. Once we have taken this step, withholding nothing, we are delighted we can look at the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have spiritual experience. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We feel we are on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. Jacob.
Jamie Dunn, alcoholic. So it's describing that release that I got, that feeling of release. You know, the only sentence that I think could accurately describe was, we begin to feel the nearest of my Creator. My fears did not fall from me right away. I still had a lot of spiritual fitness to develop, right? And that's what steps 6 and 7 help out a great deal. Steps 11, actually all the steps are designed to get me closer to the God of my own understanding. But the fears, the fears didn't fall from me. That was something that needed to be developed. The things that I'd already started to do spiritually were helping, you know, to prepare me for the fifth step, right? To be able to do that fifth step. But I did get that relief. It was instant. I did feel that. I felt very light. I felt happy. I felt a great joy in my life. I felt lighter. But it was, you know, I think in the big book somewhere, you know, Bill describes, you know, the worldly clamors come quickly in and it can wipe that feeling away. And so what I got was relief, though. And that relief, I still feel that some of that relief today. What I really want is release, right? And I don't get the release until I naturally all these people on my fourth step may have made it onto my eighth step that I have to do. My amends, I don't get the release until I can cross that person's name off the list. And I can't do that until I complete the amends process with that one person. So the relief was great, and it, you know, and it felt great, and it was the step to in the right direction. But I didn't get the release that was going to be more permanent for me until I started doing the ninth step. I didn't think I was going to talk about the ninth step tonight, but you know, the promises don't happen until I'm halfway through the ninth step. You know, I don't know if it's like exactly like that, but that's been described to me like that. That's, I don't get those ninth step promises until I complete those on my ninth step. So the relief is great, but I want the release. You know, there's more work to be done, but I don't know about you, but I wrestle my laurels quite a bit, and I rode that relief for a while until I started looking at the other steps, you know, until my sponsor, you know, would gently nudge me. Hey, where are we at in steps? I remember at one point I felt like I was off the beam of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was still doing the things that I was doing, but I wasn't doing what I was doing that I should have been doing in steps. I was still going to meetings. I was going to at least three a week. I was driving guys to the meeting. I was trying to sponsor guys. I was calling people. I was doing all those other things, but I felt like I was off the beam. So I talked to my sponsor. I was like, something's off. I'm still doing all this other stuff. And he's like, where are you at in the steps? And for me, it's always been the nice step. The relief is good. It's nice, but it doesn't last forever. It feels like I was on that pink cloud. That relief does not last forever. I got to continue on. And
oddly enough, yesterday on the golf course, the topic came up with service work. And we hear the common phrase, service work will keep you sober, right? I used to think that. I don't think that anymore. Service work will keep me busy. It's the steps and God that keep me sober. And when we get to that plateau that Jake is talking about, I just do more service work because I'm busy. And I've done that. I'm speaking from firsthand experience. I was freaking Mr. AA at about 15 years sober. I was gung-ho, militant about this deal. This is how we're going to do it, blah, blah, blah. I was involved in the committee at the district, at the intergroup. I did it as much as I could because I wasn't doing the rest of the work. I wasn't following through in the amends process. And I think that's kind of where the whole thing comes together. Not comes together totally, but a big part of the puzzle, right? And so Bill had a change of philosophy, and I had to find another sponsor. And for a brief moment, I thought about asking this friend of mine, Janice, to be my sponsor. We were riding to a meeting together, and she was my son's godmother. So she was very familiar to my wife and I. There's no ulterior motives or anything. And I was going to ask her that night in the car ride to be my sponsor. And the thought crossed my mind that I won't be humble enough to tell her the truth about my background, about all the dirty, rotten stuff that I've done. And so I didn't ask her. And I'm glad I did it. In the pamphlet, more about sponsorship or questions and answers on sponsorship, Bill writes about that. You know, this wouldn't have been the case, but we want to avoid those emotional entanglements. And I think for this alcoholic, it's a more humbling experience to tell another grown man what I've done and all those things that I've been ashamed of. And that's where the release comes from. The release comes from for that. And so my first spiritual experience really started to happen after Jimmy and I, we did that fifth step in his car. And it was the very first time I felt like I belonged, like I was one of you guys. Because up until then, you know, I had a pocket full of white chips. I never could seem to get it. Gets, you know, for 90 days, whatever, and I'm back out, 6 months, whatever, I'm back out. And I just couldn't get it. And so this time I felt like I got it, and I felt connected to something. I was very anti-God, very anti-religion when I got here. For the first few years that I was sober, and I wish I hadn't been that way, but that's the way I was. And so I don't see my life or my relationship with God in that sense anymore, but I did back then. And so I was very, very hesitant, very reluctant to embrace that kind of feeling, that spiritual feeling, the spiritual connectedness. And so I recognized it today for what it was, but I couldn't see it when it was happening. I just felt great. I was on cloud nine, you know, and I've come to understand that we talk about the pink cloud sometimes in meetings, right? And how you get that initial rush of being newly sober and things are great, things are turning out. I could literally live on a pink cloud every day if I put the effort into it, but I'm too freaking lazy. I don't want to work that hard anymore. I get comfortable with my life the way it is. And I just don't want to do as much as I used to do, but I could live on a pink cloud every day if I put that kind of effort into it. And so when we choose who's to hear our story, I've only done fifth step with my sponsor. Every sponsor that I've ever had, we did an inventory. We went through the steps again, and I told each and every one of them, I looked them in the eye and I said, I'll do whatever you tell me to do. Because the last time that I got drunk, Jimmy Holum and his sponsor came to 12 step me. I didn't realize what was happening at the time. It was too much in the fog. But I remember that day I'd gone into the bathroom. Maggie and I had this little apartment in the south side of Chicago. And I locked the door for some reason in the bathroom. I don't know why. My wife's a very religious woman. I'm not a very religious guy, but she's always been very involved in the Catholic Church. But I locked the door to the bathroom and I get on my knees and I say, God, please help. It's the first sincere prayer I'd ever said in my life that came of my own volition, right? And then later on that day, Jimmy and Eddie showed up. And I didn't realize what they were doing. And for some reason, I just looked, because they're giving me the rundown, you know, you're wasting their time. We're trying to help. You don't want to help, blah, blah, blah. Just tell us, we'll leave you alone, that kind of deal, right? Because I'm the group's prize slippy at this point. And something came over me. I looked Jimmy in the eyes, sitting next to me, and said, Jimmy, I'll do whatever you tell me to do. I haven't had a drink. And that was the first part of the surrender. When I surrendered to my sponsor, I'm one of the guys, I believe the surrender is the linchpin to the whole deal. Because the opposite of surrender is to continue to fight. And so I can't get sober if I'm still fighting. And so I surrendered to my sponsor, and I've surrendered to every sponsor I've ever had ever since. And I've had changed sponsors for a number of reasons. One guy got drunk, one guy changed philosophy, another guy moved away and never came back. My last sponsor fired me during COVID, when COVID started, and you know, any number of reasons. But I do what I teach my guys to do, and I tell each and every one of them, if anything happens to me, you need to have a new sponsor the next. And every single time I had him, because that's what we do. I think it's imperative that I don't break that chain, that I have somebody, that somebody else in my life that tells me your self-appraisal is insufficient. Because left to my own devices, the longer I stay sober, the easier it is for me to deceive myself. I don't know. I'm sure you guys don't have that problem. Mm-hmm. But it's easier for me to lie to me the longer I stay sober. And so that's why I've got to be surrounded with some guys. So I'm very careful who I let into my life today, right? The men and women who are close to me. I'm more cautious than ever. My circle used to be big, and I'd call everybody my friend. Blah, blah. I don't have a lot of friends today. I've got a group of friends that are men and women that I consider my friends, that I can confide in and know that they're going to hold that confidence. And I think that's kind of a big deal when we do that, right? And so now that I've begun to have this spiritual experience, it's like a plane when it starts to lose altitude, but it's imperceptible because it's only a few feet at a time, right? I get so high when I did the fifth step. I got so high when I did some of my first amends, right? I get this relation, just I'm one with God and the universe kind of deal, but I don't do any more work because I'm lazy and I stop. And the plane, I think I can just ride in it. And the descent is gradual. And it isn't until I see the ground, it's like, holy smokes, pull up. We got to do something here. And it always comes back to doing some more step work. And that is why I need a sponsor in my life, because left to my own devices, I'll run and do something else. I'll pick up some other activity rather than go finish some amends. Because the amends process, and I know I'm jumping forward and I apologize, but the amends process is really where the sacrifice, the personal sacrifice comes in the amends. Because up until then, all I have to go on is do talk to people. Oh, sorry, blah, blah, blah. You know, even though we don't say sorry no more, right? But now the amends process and with my wife and my family, those are the easy ones. Because, we just want you to get better. You don't owe me any money. Don't worry about it. And I'm thinking, I get to keep it, right? And Bill says, we can't keep the money. You got to pay that money back to somebody else. You got to give it to charity or do something with it. And that's where the sacrifice. Everything we do in alcoholics, all the personal growth that I've obtained in alcoholics times comes from the sacrifice that we put into this deal. Thank you.
Next reading is on page 75. Returning home, we find a place where we can be quiet for an hour, carefully reviewing what we have done. We thank God from the bottom of our heart that we know him better. Taking this book down from our shelf, we turn to the page which contains the 12 steps. Carefully reading the first 5 proposals, we ask if we have omitted anything, for we are building an ark through which we shall walk a free man at last. Is our work solid so far? Are the stones properly in place? Have we skimped on the cement put into the foundation? Have we tried to make mortar without sand? If we can answer to our satisfaction, we then look at step 6. We have emphasized willingness as being indispensable. Are we now ready to let God remove us all these things which have admitted are objectionable? Can he now take them all, everyone? If we still cling to something, we will not let go. We ask God to help us be willing. Jake.
So that was exactly what my sponsor suggested I do after I did the 5th step, was go home and ponder on this for an hour. And I went home and I think I did it the next day because it was late at night. I did it the next day. And I sat in the room for an hour and I looked at everything. I think this is news down. And I thought about it and I pondered on it and I prayed and I thought I had been thorough up to that point. And that's all I got from that. I just did what my sponsor told me to do. Maybe not exactly. I probably should have done it that night, but I didn't get anything else other than that from that. It was just something that my sponsor wanted me to do. And I did it. And to be honest with you, I don't think I've even reviewed it since then. I've reviewed the 6th step though, but as far as like what was the purpose of doing that hour? Why do we do it for an hour? I don't know. Why can't it be 30 minutes? I feel like I could have done it in 25 minutes, right? But I did it for an hour, you know. And I was dying to get out of there so I could go do what I needed to do for that day. That's just my honest take on that aspect of the 6th step. Me and my sponsor, we did the 6th step out of the 12 and 12. And I'm glad that we did. The 6th step expands on one to two paragraphs, right? At great length. And so in the 12 and 12, I was able to hear this word, the instinct, about instincts and what my instincts, how I can go overboard with my basic instincts. And that right there is a huge thing for me, that I always just want more, right? More of all of my instincts, you know, more than I should be allowed. And it becomes I make demands on people so that I can fulfill the more of those instincts. And when it comes to a relationship with my wife, that was blatant. That was very blatant that I made, you know, demands of my wife that she feed into my ego, feed into my self-centeredness at all times. You know, it could be on the littlest thing, smallest thing that we would argue about. You know, what am I arguing over? I'm arguing over my instinct to be right, my instinct for me to be lord over my household, you know, even though I didn't think of myself that way. I didn't know I was like that. I did not know that I was that much of a person that wanted to be in such control. I had no clue. One thing, I was an F up, right? I lost all the jobs. How can somebody with that level of need for control not be trustworthy enough to be employed, not be able to pay his own bills? I thought I was just a drunk. You know, I didn't know I was that much of a control freak, that I was demanding other people do it for me as well. I was not self-supporting. I wanted you to do it. I wanted you to make it easy for me. So not only was I control freak demanding everybody do what I wanted them to do, but I didn't want to do it for myself, right? But I thought that highly of myself when I first, a guy that didn't have a car, didn't have a license, and someone who thought very highly of myself. I did. But I needed God to help me with these defects of character, to help me keep my instinct, you know, my instincts in check. But I didn't know it was God that was doing it. I thought it was you guys. You guys are doing it for me. But you guys were speaking to me through God, right? And God was speaking through you to me, is a better way of saying it. So when I talk to you guys, when I talk to my sponsor, when I get your input on this stuff, I'm bringing God into the situation. Back to that, I mean, that helps a great deal to know that that you're speaking to my life, and then I can speak into somebody else's life through my own experiences. It's pretty cool. That's all I got.
Steve.
So in step six, like Jacob, so it's one paragraph here, step seven, one paragraph, and steps 8 and 9, it kind of melded together. So this is where we open up to 12 and 12, because step six, Bill kind of fleshes out the steps a little bit more. First line of 12 says, this is separates the men from the boys, right? Step six. This is where that bar graph comes in, the defectometer comes into play, because if I'm asking God to remove these defects of character, I need to identify them and claim them as my own. But I need to know what I'm asking God to remove. And so when he did this graph, the way Bill explained it to me, that everybody's born with the same number of characteristics or whatever you want to call it. And we use the seven deadly sins just to keep it simple. And so we all get the same amount, but some of us want more, and they get into excess, and they get out of bounds with God and society. In my case, it was my pride, my lust, my sloth, and anger. And I had more pride than I probably needed to have, and probably still do today. And so I need to ask God to remove the amount of pride that is interfering with my relationship with other people, to bring it back within God, within bounds of God and society. And I think this is by using that bar graph, it just all kind of made sense, because up until then, this step six really doesn't give you a lot of detail here, right? There's just not a lot there. I mean, we read it, took only 2 minutes. And so I asked God to remove these things, the amount of lust in my life. So I'm grateful to say that from the last time I was ready to drink again to this day, I haven't touched another woman, right, in any way objectionable or improper. And I owe that to Alcoholics Anonymous and you people, because my nature, my very nature, I'm a hound dog of the worst kind. And my normal nature is to do the exact opposite. And you guys taught me that I can live my life. I can be a decent man. I can change if I put the work into it. Because I don't want to change. I like living like that. I like the night. I'm drawn like a moth to a flame to the nightlife. And I love that. I still, to this day, when I hear the music, I want to go inside, and I don't. And that I owe to Alcoholics Anonymous. And by doing the work, by recognizing these things and seeing what's wrong with me on paper, makes all the difference in the world. Thank you.
The last reading for tonight, page 76. When ready, we say something like this. My creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove me from every single defect of character which is in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here. We have then completed step seven.
So step five, identify my defect of character. I have them on paper, got the graph, right? And I know where I need to concentrate on. Step six, I ask God to help me with those character defects. Step seven is the asking God for the humility, right? But my shortcomings are best described for me in the way of saying that they are sub character defects, right? So I've got these character defects, seven deadly sins. Well, lust can come in many different forms. Envy can come in many different forms. And so I need God to be able to help me identify the things that I didn't think were a big deal, right? Character assassination, I do that quite a bit. I'll talk about you behind your back, right? To make myself look better, right? And I do it a lot at work. I've been known to do it in AA, right? You hear it all the time, don't take my inventory. Well, I mean, the way that I choose to describe somebody else's experience in AA now is more constructive rather than character assassination. Because if somebody divulges information to me, I get an opportunity to learn their struggles, right? So I use that as a way for me to learn, right? So I don't character assassinate. At work, it's easy to go down that road of talking about somebody else at work and how they do things and how they don't do it right, but I do, right? I do it the right way. I'm better than them. So I'm going to talk about them behind it. So I asked God in step seven. I said the seven step prayer every single day. I can recite it. You know, I can say it without even knowing what I'm saying half the time, right? But I say it down on my knees, show reverence to the God of my understanding, and I allow humility to come in my life, right? Step seven is to prepare me for step eight, so that I can have enough humility to take everything from my fourth step, most of it transpose it over to the ninth step. There were some things on my ninth step that weren't on my fourth step, because there's some great harm that I've caused people that I had no resentments towards, but I needed a lot of humility in order to get that. So I asked God for that.
So in step seven, I need to start to learn to grow some humility. I began to do some of this when I did my inventory, when I was able to do my fifth step with my sponsor and let all the stuff out, right? I started to gain a little bit of humility. And step seven, the purpose of step seven is help me build more humility, because when I get the further on, the next step, man, I got to start having some of this in my back pocket. The definition of humility as we use it is to show submissive respect. One of the most useful tools, greatest tool my sponsor ever gave to me, was the morning routine. He said, I want you to call me at 6:45 every morning. I want you to read the doctor's opinion, say the Thursday prayer, and read a digital friction. Call me every day, 6:45. He said, Bill back then sponsored a lot of guys. You had a 5-minute window. If you missed your window, call me after 10, because now you're stepping in somebody else's time. Because a lot of working guys, right? And that routine is what I stick to this. Now, I've added more prayers to it since then. I got the seven-step prayer in there, and I've added something else from the 11-step prayer that I kind of put together from the book, just kind of made my own 11-step prayer. And I say, I got a couple of personal requests, if you will, that I add in at the end. And these are the things that I've learned to do to help maintain some degree of humility in my life. To acknowledge that there's something out there that's getting me sober and keeping me sober. And it ain't me, because I always thought it was me and I'm going to do this. And I'm, you know, somebody needs to give me a pat on the back and blah, blah, blah. And just by the very fact of maintaining this daily routine keeps me in a better place. So when this old lady, she was old back then, 25 years ago, 30 years ago, she said, she's gone to the big meeting in the sky. She said, because I'm struggling with step three early on, right? She says, Steve, when you get up in the morning, try to make your first conscious thought to be good morning, God. I thought it was a bunch of nonsense, right? Like, I've heard some dumb stuff in AA, but that kind of stuff got to be in the top three. And for about a month, every Monday night, I used to see her at the Grassfield meeting in Chesapeake. She said, you didn't say good morning, God? Yeah. I was lying, clearly lying to her, right? Just to shut her up. But she kept at it. She was very persistent. And I started doing it after a month or so. I started trying to incorporate that to make my first conscious thought before my head comes off the pillow to be good morning, God. Because what that does, it rearranges the gears in my mind rather than flipping the covers off. I got to run out the door. I'm late again. Blah, blah. Son of a biscuit. Blah, blah, blah. I know you guys don't do that, but I used to do that. And so... by doing that, it helps to slow me down just a little bit and get my brain going in the right direction. So when I do my full morning routine, I'm already on track. In my case, and I'm just going to talk about me trying to develop this humility. If I don't do this, if I'm not at least willing to put a little effort into it, I'm not going to do the rest of the steps. That's just because the amends, to go through the amend process, to write the eight-step list, and then to go actually to see people, to make the amends requires a significant amount of humility on my part, because what if they say no? What if they throw me out of their office? Oddly enough, the worst amends I've ever had were the other people in AA. AA members just stink at taking amends for the most part. There's two that I've done. The same lady that taught me to say good morning, God, I didn't know that I said something snarky to her one day after a meeting, and she held a resentment against me for 25 years. And I didn't know this. 23 years, something like that. And I saw her at the district picnic, and she said, Steve, I've been holding a resentment against you for 23 years. And I said, well, my God, I didn't know. Will you please let's talk about this? Let me make amends to you. She said, no, I don't want your amends. She's sober at least every bit of 40 years. And I'm thinking, man, come on. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you both. Right?
You don't have to tell that they're going to hire.
All right.
You can sign up for email on our website at simpleactions.net. There you can also listen to past meetings. I'm going to pass around the seven tradition baskets. The seventh tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and the general services office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. There's also Venmo and PayPal scannable. Our common welfare, word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meeting can take place. Announcements. Are there any AA related announcements?
District 24 is having their picnic, their annual picnic, September 30th, I think, at Portsmouth City Park. And they're looking for anybody that might want to volunteer to help out with the picnic. There's a picnic committee. If anybody wants to get on that committee, let me know. I'll get you in contact with the committee chair. And they're going to have food. They're going to have games. It's designed to bring in family members. So put that on your calendar. I think flyers will be coming out next month.
Yes. Our very own Jake M here will be celebrating 8 years of continuous sobriety this Friday night at the Into Action Group, which meets in downtown Metropolitan Driver. And we're going to have cake, coffee, pony rides. I heard there's a piñata, all that good stuff. And our speaker is going to be Larry W. from Norfolk. Thank you.
Thank you. I have an announcement for us. This Wednesday, we're going to be holding a safety workshop on Zoom, not in this room, though. The yellow flyers over there. It starts at Wednesday, July 26, 6:30 p.m. Panel of three, Chris W., Christy E., and David H. Again, you can come to simpleactions.net and find our Zoom to log into that. And then another one for us. It's pretty far out, but Monday, September 11th will be our next supper and speaker with Angie M. Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members. The literature is available over at the table there. If you can fold it and put it in your pocket, it's free. If you like to buy a book and you don't have money, just see a home group member or myself and we'll work out an arrangement. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or like additional information about sponsorship, I will be available here after we close the meeting. Please feel free to talk to myself. Or if you don't want to talk to anyone, you can send an email to info@simpleactions.net. Reminder, smokers, please use the butt can provided outside and stay well away from the church doors. Meeting after meeting, all invited and encouraged to join us for fellowship. The meeting after the meeting, it'll be held at Cafe Stella.
What? Cafe Stella?
Down the road on Colonial Ave, across the street from Bank of America. Again, let's thank our speakers tonight. And I'm going to read a vision for you. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you. All right. Close the meeting with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not to temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory.
Thank you.
Thank you, brother.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Natalia.